Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one, the only Dan Z, and I am recording this on Wednesday, April 29th, which means there are now only 5 days left till May 4th, or as in Star Wars Day, May the 4th be with you. Dan, when's the first time you ever heard somebody use this phrase?
You know, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I just feel like, I mean, especially as a teacher, every year for May the 4th, when school is actually, you know, in session in an actual building, we always made sure that everyone wore Star Wars t-shirts. We had Star Wars music playing in between all the periods. We had the best time with it because it's always been fun. And I've always sort of felt like Disney and Lucasfilm should capitalize more on the merchandising aspect of this. I feel like it's just been around. What has it been, 10 years? Who knows?
Well, see, now that's the thing. I did some digging before today's show, and I came across a story that, first of all, I want you to validate that, you know, whether or not you've heard this, but reportedly the earliest recorded use of the phrase was back in 1979. As the story goes, it was the day that Margaret Thatcher took office as the first female prime minister of the United Kingdom. And supposedly members of Thatcher's political party wanted to take out a full-page newspaper ad to commemorate the occasion. And somebody in the committee was a huge fan of Episode 4, New Hope, and supposedly noticed that the date that the new prime minister would be taking up residence at 10 Downing Street was May 4th. And this is why the congratulatory ad in the London Evening News reportedly featured this phrase, "May the 4th be with you, Maggie. Congratulations." So have you heard the story anywhere else? Or
That rings a bell because there is a great Empire Strikes Back kind of making of book that came out called Once Upon a Galaxy, which you can find on eBay if you're really lucky to find a good copy of it. Mm-hmm. That has sort of a diary of Empire, and now that you say that, it does. Yeah, that's great. And what a cool thing. Who knew, right?
Okay, because the thing is, if you go on Google, there is supposedly a photo of the ad, and it's a little too neat, kind of the way that this story is a little too neat. And I don't know. I feel like maybe one of us should reach out to Snopes.com and go, "Hey, can you check on this?" Just, you know, not that there aren't more important things to check on, but let's see. Other news since we last recorded. What are your thoughts on Rise of Skywalker moving up its release date to again May the 4th?
Sure. Well, I think it's wonderful, and I love everything that Disney Plus is going to do the week of May the 4th, with they're going to use some different art, some concept art from Ralph McQuarrie for some of the little cells that where you click on to go to the different Skywalker films, and they're going to do some hyperspace graphics, and it's just kind of nice, and it kind of makes sense considering what's going on in the world, but it's a nice early gift.
Oh, no, I agree. But I do want to give credit where credit is due here. It was our buddy Drew Taylor, co-host of that great Mission Impossible podcast, Light the Fuse, and also does crummy little show Fine Tuning with somebody else.
I love one of the hosts on that show, the other guy. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I tell you what, though, I must have quarantine brain because he's starting to sound entertaining to me. So who knows?
Oh, he'll love to hear that. But anyway, Drew was the one who pointed out that if you take the 30,000-foot view, and what was it? Frozen showed up early. It was available on the streaming service starting on March 15th, and then Onward, which, you know, had artificially had its theatrical release, cut down because of the quarantine and all that. That showed up on Disney Plus on April 3rd. The interesting thing by having Star Wars Rise of Skywalker show up on May the 4th, which is a full 2 months. It was not supposed to show up in Disney's subscription service until July. As Drew pointed out, by having these high profile films show up on Disney Plus far earlier than expected, this covers a multitude of sins with Disney's subscription service, which is a polite way of saying that paying $6.99 a month to watch the live action reboot of Lady and the Tramp and a Timmy failure, mistakes were made. People weren't doing that. But on the other hand, you know, for $6.99 to see all of the Star Wars, you know, the entire Skywalker saga, that's a big deal.
A billion-dollar film.
Oh, absolutely. From my side of the fence, the big get on May the 4th is the last episode of Star Wars Clone Wars. You and I, when we were pre-gaming, we're talking about the last episode that aired.
The Phantom Apprentice. Yeah.
And, man, these things just keep getting better and keep getting stronger, but it's like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for the last two, especially knowing what's about to happen. In fact, I think that's the real credit to Dave Filoni and the team that have put season 7 together. Especially this last episode, when you're sitting there watching, like, for example, Ahsoka talking with Anakin. And you realize as they're talking, it's like, oh, we are a half hour into Revenge of the Sith at this point. And it's just sort of like, oh, it's all about to go down.
The first episode of The Siege of Mandalore is for opening 10 minutes is just cinematic and gorgeous and has the classic Lucasfilm screen at the beginning. And then you get a lot of kind of like the greatest hits. It's very much a love letter to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, you realize that, oh, this is happening right before the opening of Revenge of the Sith. And then when you see the Phantom Apprentice, you realize, no, we're about 20, 25 minutes in. Mm-hmm. So the fact that these are running concurrently, I think, is a masterstroke of storytelling. And I feel very confident in saying that these first couple episodes is Dave Filoni's masterwork. It's his absolute masterpiece. And it's gorgeous. It's incredible. And I think the first episode of this has become my favorite episode of the entire Clone Wars series.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, I was about to say that just the
animation and the motion capture for the duel.
Wow. Well, no, I was about to say that, that's a masterclass in staging an action scene. And in fact, what's interesting, if you go all the way back to the Clone Wars animated feature and compare how they did the lightsaber battles in that to the battle between Darth Maul and Ahsoka, I would say it's better than a lot of the stuff that's done for the features.
It's great.
Staged,
And Stars.com has a great behind the scenes video they posted that shows Ray Park, the original Darth Maul and Maul from Solo, fighting that and filming that, and I got to show my son, hey, this is how motion capture works. That's why that fight scene looks so incredible, because it was actually really done.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll have to seek that out. But on the other hand, today or early yesterday, they dropped that chunk from Shattered? Is that the...
The next one. Yep, that's the third episode.
Mm-hmm. And it's just this great scene with Captain Rex and Ahsoka on the bridge of a Star Cruiser. And, the two of them kind of having a heart-to-heart. And what is it, Rex, Rex explains that the clones have mixed feelings about the war, that many people wish it hadn't had never happened, but without it, we clones wouldn't exist. And Ahsoka's reply of, well, perhaps some good has come from all of it. The Republic couldn't ask for better soldiers. And to know right on the other side of that is,
is bad news. And else is interesting, too, is it was said on Twitter that Lucasfilm isn't going to give any trailers or teases for the very last episode because they don't want to spoil anything. So it must be chock full.
Okay. Yeah. No, cannot wait. And again, that's Victory and Death. That's the title of the last episode of season 7. While you're tuning in on May the 4th, we get the first episode of Disney Gallery Star Wars The Mandalorian, right? Which I hate to judge things from trailers, but this is wonderful quote from Dave Filoni on this, where he talks about, you know, George and what he wanted to do with the Star Wars stories, and that they are in fact about hope. They're supposed to be optimistic, and that even in bleak settings, and again, that's actually the charm of the Mandalorian. You would never, if I had to lay down money when that show started about where it was headed, this is never the direction I would have picked. And it's such a deep, rich show that constantly surprises. Speaking of surprise, were you surprised to hear that they're already working on season 3?
I was surprised to hear the news so early when we haven't even, a second of footage from the second season. But I don't know if that was just kind of something leaked out to give people something to hold on to or what. But yeah, I was stunned. How about you?
Well, the thing of it is that this isn't the usual, behind the scenes gossip unsourced. I mean, in this case, it talks about how creator Jon Favreau has been writing season 3 for a while, and that the art department, led by Lucasfilm vice president and executive creative director Doug Chang, they've been creating concepts for season 3 for the past few weeks. And unnamed source, but we just started pre-production. We are looking forward to further adventures of the Mandalorian in season 3. So, looking forward to it, at the same time, I'm looking forward to the Mandalorian, the art and imagery book that Titan Comics is putting out on the 26th of May. And finally, did you see, how many times has the art of Rebels, Star Wars Rebels book been put off at this point?
I feel like, two or three times? Does that sound right?
Yeah. But same thing, that 208-page hardcover, which is being published by Dark Horse Books, also is hitting store shelves on the 26th and is a pre-order price of $26.49. And I feel like a doof because I didn't order that at the same time I ordered my copy of The Mandalorian, The Art and Imagery. But I will correct that mistake. And while I'm correcting that mistake, I will finally get around to pre-ordering the Star Wars book, Expand Your Knowledge of a Galaxy Far, Far Away.
That seems like a good idea.
Well, it doesn't come out till October 20th. And then what is it? Written by Cole Horton, Pablo Hidalgo, and some other
Hidalgo
guy.
Hidalgo.
Some other guy's name slips my mind for some reason.
Is it Drew Taylor? No.
Above
his pay grade, I think.
Ah, okay. And while we're talking about, the limited series that Lucasfilm is making for Disney Plus. I'm just fascinated by this. Hollywood is shut down. So what sort of social distancing are they doing up, at the Presidio at Lucasfilm? Because they're casting on the Rogue One prequel. You've got to be filled or thrilled that Genevieve O'Reilly is coming back as Mon Mothma?
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. She was great in Rogue One. She was awesome in Rebels, voicing the same character. Mm-hmm. She just brings a nice inner strength and calm and serenity at the same time. I think that's great. It's really great.
Okay. And other news that's coming out of this is that Tony Gilroy, who co-wrote Rogue One, is now officially the showrunner on this Rogue One prequel. But then in the same window of time, we had this news break about this new female Star Wars series, supposedly being put together by the creative team that did Netflix, Emmy Award-winning Russian Doll series. And, look, if you go to certain corners of the web right now, folks, you will read about how supposedly this female-driven action thriller, which is supposed to feature martial arts elements, which is set in an alternate timeline from the usual Star Wars universe. I mean, I'm sorry, that description intrigues me, but it, because of that key phrase, female-driven, there's this certain subset of Star Wars fans who got upset. And so there is this faux story out there, Dan, about how supposedly Bob Iger is livid with Kathleen Kennedy for, you know, putting the show into development. And, you know, it's like, no, Bob Iger is a typical repressed male, all right? He only has 5 emotions, and none of them are livid. In fact, he only has a 6th, you know, emotion if you count gassy. And just the notion that they're doing this again because it's Kelly Marie Tran 2, you know?
2.0, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, I'm sorry. It just... Can you wait to see it to hate it?
It's a long line of fan outcry before. I mean, my favorite example, it's not related to a gender thing, but when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker in The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. people went crazy and thought it wasn't a great idea, and he turned in one of the most iconic performances in cinema history.
Mm. You're not wrong. You know, so again, just, you know, and again, more to the point, this is the Russian doll, folks. Anybody who saw that series over Netflix, and, you know, this fascinating reboot of One Evening in Time and how many different ways you can tell the same story. They're a clever bunch. And the fact that they've been invited to the Star Wars table, that's actually good news, folks. So... anyway, all right. Okay, so we spent entirely too much time talking about the future of the Star Wars franchise. In a moment, when we get back, we're going to talk about a time when there was no Star Wars, when it was actually somebody's job to explain to the world what a Star Wars was.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. But before we get started on the, before there was a Star Wars, Dan, I don't know. Did you hear about what your buddy Lou Mangiello just did? An interview he did at WDW Radio?
Yeah, and a fantastic interview that I look forward to chatting about. And I've only gotten to hear snippets of it, but I saw the promotions, and wow, mm-hmm. what a big get.
Yeah, well, to explain what we're talking about here, folks, Lou scored an interview with Dan Cockrell, who was the former Walt Disney World vice president. He traveled around the resort quite a bit. He was in charge of Epcot for a while, then the Magic Kingdom, and finally wound up over at Disney Studios. And this is what Lou got him to talk about, because basically Dan was in charge of the studios right after Disney had bought Lucasfilm in October of 2012. And, you know, and so Dan was there on the ground floor when they began planning Star Wars for that park. And
not Dan Z, by the way.
No, but yeah, this Dan Cockrell. But yeah, and first of all, I have to tell you folks, I'm just thrilled that Dan spilled the beans on this, because Len and I want to say starting in 2013 or thereabouts, we began talking about that version of Star Wars Land that was being built at the studios. And the plan at that time, Dan, was, you know, well, again, this is the park you worked in. So... in fact, all of that time you spent in Mickey's of Hollywood, do you know if you walked out the back door of that store and, you know, and looked out and you were, you know, you could see Echo Lake with Gertie the dinosaur?
Yeah, Keystone Clothiers.
There we go. Okay. All right. Picture this. Okay. Instead of walking out the door and seeing Echo Lake and Gertie the Dinosaur, what you saw was Mos Eisley Spaceport. There's this huge recreation of Tatooine with a broad street where if you walk down it, and there were little alleys and marketplaces, but if you walked in into the street, the very end of the street was a slightly rethemed version of Star Tours, but it literally from basically Keystone Clothiers all the way to Mickey's Hollywood, and then all the way over to where the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular was located. That was all Star Wars land. But this is a version of that park that Star Wars land did not intrude on Streets of America. In fact, in this version of the plan, lights, motor action, because, it had only been built, back in 2000 for the, the Millennium? No. For 2005 for Disneyland's 50th. The whole notion of tearing down something that you only had in place for 10 years seemed kind of nuts. But this was the plan. And, I'll tell you what, let me share this is basically a transcript of a lot of what Dan Cockrell shared with Lou. So, October 2012, we just purchased Lucasfilm, and it started to become the talk of, okay, how are we going to bring this to life? What are we going to do? And Hollywood Studios ended up being the place where Star Wars Land would go, because it's where it seemed to fit the best, and it was the park that needed the update the most. So we work on the project for a couple of years. You get a big aerial view of the park, and you get out a big magic mark, and you say, okay, what if this was here, and what if that was there? And you start blocking off these big chunks of space. And we had the Epic Theater, the Indiana Jones Theater. That was going to be the heart of Star Wars Land. That was going to go away. We're going to plug a big Star Wars ride experience right in there. And then the Mos Eisley Cantina was going to be right across from Star Tours. And we had all sorts of great concepts for that. They'd gone a ways down this path. They hadn't got to do any architectural drawings or anything yet. But then one day they get a call. And the call is from the Disney brass, who says, we have some news for you all. And the Imagineer guys, they've all heard this line many times before in their career, but this is Dan talking. I had never been through this. And as the story goes, Bob Iger had met with Kathleen Kennedy, and her review was, there are way more Star Wars stories in front of us than behind us. And so should we really be building a Tatooine building, something that appeals to the 50-year-olds who saw No Hope back in 77? Or do we want to build something else that appeals to all of the upcoming generations who are going to get to know the new stories? And that was the day that Tatooine was killed at the studios. All the concepts were put on the shelf, and I'm sure they're sitting in a vault, and I'm sure they're going to be shown someday of what that land would have looked like and what the attractions are going to be. But that's a hard reality of Imagineering. Until it's signed, until you start breaking ground, none of these projects are guaranteed. Interesting little side note here, Dan. One of the things that actually did kill this version of Star Wars Land was the fact that Disney's private events office, by the way, this came... private events office by way of the ESPN Wide World of Sports. They had booked out cheerleading competitions all the way through to 2025. And one of the things they had promised all of these cheerleading groups was that there would be an award ceremony inside of the Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular. Because it was this one venue that was undercover, so if it rained, you didn't have to worry about that. And all the cheerleaders got excited about being on the set, where Indiana Jones was.
Sure.
But they, you know, again, it was one of these things where it's like, no, you can't tear that down or build a Star Wars ride. We have a contract through 2025. So you need to find a new place to put your Star Wars land, which is, again, ironically, why Lights, Motor, Action and the Streets of America got torn down, because nobody wants to disappoint cheerleaders. What I love about this part of the story is the notion of the 50-year-olds, you know, the people who only know the Star Wars that they knew, you know, from when they were growing up. And I have to say I'm in that category, though I am 61 now. Wow, I'm old.
You're only as old as you feel, right?
Well, then I'm 70. Okay. all right. I bring this up because, in fact, I want to direct your attention, Dan, as well as our listeners' attention. Van Eaton Galleries is his outfit out of California that regularly does pop culture related auctions. They, over the past couple of years, they've done some amazing auctions related to Disney memorabilia and, you know, costumes and the like. And they've got a brand new, it's the title of the auction is Pop Culture in Disneyland. It's happening on May 9th. Sadly, it's a online event only. When they typically do these auctions, they have a preview period where you can go in and look at the props and they get the items up for auction up close. And some of them are just amazing. But anyway, the auction catalog went live on April 22nd, Earth Day. Which is kind of ironic because so many of these items are out of this world. And for Star Wars fans, there's a lot of killer stuff. First and foremost,
I'm drooling. And this is, oh my gosh. I'm going to probably have to arm wrestle Steve Sansweet to get this stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, for starters, they're selling a chunk of the Death Star, or the model that was used to shoot the climatic aerial. it's the stuff that was created to be shot in, that was in the driveway of the house, right? That's where they did so much of the effects work for that, right?
In the parking lot area, they had a big giant piece set up. Yeah.
Touching on other films from the series, they have an early campaign book for Return of the Jedi back when the film was still known as Revenge of the Jedi. And you were mentioning Ralph McQuarrie and, you know, the nice things they're going to do at Disney Plus for May the 4th. And the interesting thing is that this book, Spiral Bound book, supposedly comes with concept art that Ralph just recently did. Ralph did for Revenge of the Jedi. Though the reason I think of recently is you just posted on or commented on Twitter. You saw an early piece of concept art for Empire that.
That McQuarrie did.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I'd never seen that image myself, and especially now that we're in this strange. Can you explain to me why it is right now that we seem to be in the white hot center of the 40th anniversary celebration of Empire? Didn't that come out? Well, I guess it did come out in May, right?
There's gonna be a huge merchandising push that's gonna be pretty intense. It's going to kick off on May the 4th. And by the way, if you're going to be doing some shopping on Shop Disney, be sure to go to our Coffee with Kenobi affiliate link and help out the show and get yourself some nice Star Wars merchandise too.
Killer. Okay. All right. Getting back to Revenge of the Jedi, they have, you and I have talked at length about the original poster for Revenge of the Jedi and how I kick myself to this day. I had it in the theater. I was managing.
I know. My goodness.
I was a moron. Okay. The other thing, they have a press kit entitled Introducing the Ewoks. Because, again, you have to explain to the world who these walking teddy bears are and why they're so lethal. And then had you ever heard about this thing, the Jedi Adventure Center?
No, this is completely new to me.
Okay, same thing here. I mean, I literally had never heard this before, but basically what they're selling as part of this auction at Van Eaton is a piece of promotional countertop display for this thing. But evidently the Jedi Adventure Center was this series of activity centers that were set up in malls around the United States around the time of the release of The Return of the Jedi, and they included photo opportunities, interactive elements, and also awarded prizes to lucky visitors. And, you know, I have to ask, do we have any listeners who ever saw these things around malls? Because I never heard of this. So what, that would have been 83, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And anybody has any pictures? Or, I mean, we got lucky the last time. In fact, thank you so much to the listeners in the last podcast who came forward with not only photos of you know, Darth Vader and, you know, when Don Post brought him to the Disney shopping village, but also shared memories of, you know, the time. So it's always great to have somebody actually back up these stories I tell.
Affirmation, baby.
Okay. And then, well, let's jump to the piece that most excites me. Okay. This is... it's a rare pre-release exhibitor campaign book from 77 for Star Wars. And this is the description from the auction catalog. This incredible book is filled with images from the film and profiles of characters and was designed to inform exhibitors about the revolutionary film prior to its release. And this particular book comes from the collection of Bill Wallen, who helped create promotional material and advertising campaigns for the film. Now, again, you've studied Star Wars and Lucasfilm history much more than I have, Dan. The name Bill Wallen, does that ring a bell with you? Or
no, I just sort of like I know that he has something to do with some of the history, you know, tangentially, but not okay. I couldn't put it down.
Okay. But again, what I've been able to find out is basically that this is the guy, again, you have to understand, he's putting together the promotional campaign before the film is done. I mean, they're still cutting it. There's still, you know, temporary effects, no music. So he's working off of the script. He's working off of, you know, whatever George has been able to show him and tell him. But he's then got to create, you know, this material that's then got to excite exhibitors to go, okay, I'll take a chance on your little Star Wars film, you know. So Bill's the guy who gets to craft the very first descriptions to the public of these characters. And Dan, I'm going to flat out ask you how well he does. So okay. We start with Princess Leia, who is described as the very young senator from Alderaan, who has been using her political position to secretly gather information against the Empire. The strong-willed, intelligent princess has been a unifying force in bringing about the rebellion against the oppression of the powerful Galactic Empire. That work?
That 100% nails it, and actually, you know, ironically, ties in a lot of stuff from the new canonical stuff, since they went back into that when Lucasfilm was purchased by Disney. I mean, it's beat by beat.
Wow. Okay. We now get to Luke Skywalker, who is a 20-year-old farm boy on the remote planet of Tatooine. He is compelled to break with his dull chores on his uncle's moisture farm. The cryptic message of a captured princess catapults the brave, impetuous hero into a series of adventures on various worlds of a distant galaxy. Accompanied by his two servant robots, Luke challenges the Galactic Empire's ultimate weapon, the Death Star.
I like that one too. I mean, it's really? Pretty right on them, even like the age. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay, but the brave, impetuous hero.
I think Impetuous is a bit of a stretch. I mean, I can maybe point to a couple of spots in A New Hope where he might show a bit of that, but that's more just the excitement of getting away from where he is. So no, so that might be a bit of a stretch from an adjective.
Okay, well, I have to say they're accompanied by his two servant robots, and the fact again, robots, you know, yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, that this is the movie that kind of introduced the term droids, and the whole notion of, if I put in two servant droids, well, what's a droid? Okay, they're a robot. Shut up, just buy my movie. So
yes.
All right, and finally, this last one.
This is Ben, the problematic one.
Well, yeah, it is. All right, so Ben Kenobi, a once respected name in the galaxy, is now an outlaw in the Tatooine Mountains. The shabby old desert rat of a man was, before the rise of the sinister Galactic Empire, one of the greatest warriors of the Old Republic. Now, even now in his old age, he can still be a threat to the sovereignty of the galaxy because of his very special powers. Okay, what's right? What's wrong?
Well, for one thing, I thought Luke is 19, not 20 in A New Hope, Luke and Leia. But Ben certainly isn't an outlaw. He's definitely kind of a strange old hermit, as he's described by Uncle Owen. And I certainly wouldn't call him a shabby old desert rat. I don't know. One of the greatest warriors of the Old Republic. Interesting. But the Old Republic was before the Phantom Menace, so that's off too. And then I like that he has very special powers. Threat to the sovereignty of the galaxy because of very special powers. That's just interesting because he's not a threat to the galaxy. He's a threat to the Empire, who has obviously a very tight grip over the freedom of the galaxy. So that one's definitely off.
Okay.
But fun. Well, very fun.
I don't know. No doubt. But I get the other thing. In fact, I apologize. I should have pulled this while I was doing the research tonight, but there's more information is out there now about the Obi-Wan Kenobi limited series for Disney Plus. And, you know, and it literally is. It is set on Tatooine. It is set, Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. And it does, in fact, you know, now mind you, have we talked about how they've crept it in from six episodes to four?
I think we did mention that, yes.
Okay, all right. So that's, but supposedly, these are for 90-minute chunks, or that's been explained to me. Oh, wow. But it does, in fact, you know, have, you know, Ben is you know, sort of from a distance watching Luke, and evidently this is what the story entails, that he has to step in a discreet way to protect the boy. So for me, it's just fascinating to find this description of the first, you know, the first time we meet Ben, and to realize that, you know, I mean, we're oddly enough, this, you know, this coming week, we're going to get to see, you know, the Star Wars, a Clone Wars version of, you know, General Kenobi step off the stage. But, you know, sometime very soon, we're going to return to Tatooine and, you know, see what happened in that interim period. And I know, was it Rebel? No. Yes, it was Rebels that took us back there, right?
When Obi-Wan was voiced by Stephen Stanton, and he took care of Darth Maul once and for all.
Wow. It's a lot of dovetailing here, Dan. A lot of dovetailing. All right.
Yes.
Speaking of Kenobi, what's been going on with Coffee with Kenobis? Are we still doing the live show?
We are. The live show is going great. Our audience seems to grow every week, which is wonderful. It's every Monday night at 8:00 p.m. Central Time at coffeewithkenobi.com/live, or just go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi. We always give a top five topic, and then next week people come with their top five lists and we discuss them together. You can ask me questions about anything Star Wars or podcasting. It's been great. And on May the 4th, we've got a couple of great things going. First, we've got a feature-length film commentary of New Hope recorded by me the co-creator of Coffee with Kenobi Corey Club, and my RCWK newsman, Tom Gross. And I also have an exclusive interview I did with Ashley Eckstein talking about the Siege of Mandalore that's going to air on May the 4th as well. A lot of good stuff.
Wow. That'll be great.
Yeah. Thanks.
Jeez. Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like must view, or actually it's a podcast, must listen podcasting. and Patreon wise, what are we up to over there?
Patreon wise, we've got a new incentive where people can watch, besides our listen to CWK Pour Over, which is our podcast on Patreon, where you can listen to us talk about different things in popular culture, Star Wars, films, sports, all kinds of stuff. We've now added a video podcast to that as well, so you can see the video of the recordings, and they've been a lot of fun to do too.
Okay. Well, definitely sounds like stuff worth checking out. Over on my side, what we got? We got Disney Dish with Len Testa. We're recording a new show of that tomorrow. We got, what is it? Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse, who we just did an update of the show we recorded last week. We actually threw out the entire news segment because of this whole Trolls World Tour, AMC and Regal.
Fiasco, yeah.
Yeah, that's... that's going to get really interesting. In fact, and what's fascinating is Disney is just sitting back because, frankly, its whole business plan is built on the fact that it's, when we're talking blockbusters like Rise of Skywalker, they still want the 90-day release window. You know, they still want movies to be released theatrically so that then... when it comes time, you know, and people get excited, it's like, ooh, that's now available.
Extra bump.
Yeah, and that's it exactly. You know, that's what compels them to go and buy a subscription to Disney Plus because it's a blockbuster. But yeah, this is just sitting back and watching this happen. We also have Marvelous Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams. And again, that's another reason that Disney just sitting back because they have all of these Marvel movies that they've had to reschedule, but they still want to release theatrically. We also have Fine Tuning with a certain Drew Taylor. And just found out that we're going to be interviewing the director of Scoob, which is another film. That's
wow.
About, yeah. That's fun. But yeah, that's another movie that just got bumped to, you know, premium video on demand. So
I'm looking forward to that one.
It does look good. But at the same time, it's just, you know, in a weird sort of way, one of the reasons that Trolls World Tour and Scoob both initially got a pass from exhibitors was that, you know, they understood that both of these movies had set up, you know, in kind of the Star Wars fashion, you know, that huge cross promotional effort where there were toys arriving at theaters and, sure, you know, toys that were going into Happy Meals and cereal boxes that had the characters on them, but they were all keying off of their original release dates. So, you know, it just wasn't a situation where you could do like a Mulan or, you know, just push the release date off for 6 months, you know, that this stuff was arriving at Target. So, you know, that's the thing. They initially got, you know, they got a pass from exhibitors, you know, to the effect of, okay, we understand you had these cross promotional deals. You have to be out in that window. So, okay, if you have to be in an on-demand digital release, so be it. What set them off, though, was when Universal just yesterday bragged and got into great specifics about how much money that Trolls World Tour had made, that in the 3 weeks that had been available on Digital Dan, it had made as much money as the original tour Trolls did back in 2016 over 5 months of theatrical release. And, you know, that was the straw that kind of broke the camel's back with AMC and Regal and the European theater guilds. Because they felt like, you know, here's Universal, there's gold in them there hills, and it's like, oh, wait, yeah, a minute. You know, we want to keep people going to theatrical films. But and speaking of merch, again, we also have the I Want That podcast, which Michelle and I will be recording a new show this Friday and talking about all the stuff that isn't making out into stores. But anyway, okay, folks, tell you what, if you could do Dan and I a favor here, if you could head over to iTunes and not only rate and recommend Coffee with Kenobi, but also Looking at Lucasfilm. And if you really enjoyed what you listened to tonight, if you could head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful. Now, Dan, you know, again, we were talking just earlier tonight about your Twitter feed and how you put lots of fun stuff in there to comment on, like that. Again, that great piece of early Ralph McQuarrie concept art from Empire Strikes Back. Where else can they find you?
Yeah, so you can, if you want to chat with me individually on Twitter, it's at Mr. Zehr, M-R-Z-E-H-R, and certainly Coffee with Kenobi is all over social media, Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, did I say Pinterest? Yeah, basically everywhere, and Twitter too.
Okay. And by Sound Defense, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. It's Jim Hill Media, and on Facebook at jimhillmedianews.com. So, anyway, remind me at the top of the show, or when you're pre-gaming, we talk about you just got sent the first two episodes of Disney Gallery Star Wars. The Mandalorian, yeah, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So, and you know what I'll be doing after we sign off?
All right. So then why don't I shut up and let you go do that? So, and then Dan will have truly cool stuff to talk about when we come back and record a new show. But till then, thanks for listening.